Final feedback session of our meeting, so the third feedback session in relation to the KPIs. So where we looked at the key performance indicators in relation to the strategy, and if you recall, we were looking at the two different strategies, so strategy one and strategy three, and the first two groups looked at strategy one. So I'm going to ask the first two groups, first of all, to report, and then perhaps we'll have a little bit of discussion on those and some feedback and comment from Yale, and then we'll do the last two after that. So in terms of that feedback, if we can perhaps start with Paul. Where are you hiding, Paul?
Thank you, Joanna. This is the last feedback session of the day, so I ask that you all keep perked up and hopefully pay attention to the work that's gone in from the four groups. And in that vein, I'm probably going to put a bit of a different twist on how we deliver this to try and keep you going for the next three groups. So firstly, here's the group one in action. And our task was goal one, which was the single set of high quality standards and then the various secondary goals. And as you can see from the deep thinking that's going on in this scene, it was not an easy task, but everybody was fully engaged. The one thing we did do, we asked everybody to come at this, not necessarily as an expert in setting KPIs for standard setters, but to bring their perspectives from their own organisations when they've dealt with setting KPIs previously. And they were the strategic goals and the secondary goals that we dealt with. So now let's get to the meat of the issue. Fishing versus standard setting. What's that got to do with standard setting, you might ask? Well, there's two reasons I've put this picture up. Number one, to show off the trophy bass that I caught this year up in Canada. But that's not the primary reason. What I wanted to do was use this as an analogy to really outline the fact that there are some processes, goals, and achievements that are very easy to measure and easy to evidence. And there are others that are extremely difficult. Starting with the fishing one, and I will come back to this fishing analogy as we go through some of the things that we brought up. If you look at this picture and the smug look on my face, you can see that I clearly achieved my goal of the day, which was to go out fishing and catch a trophy bass. The actual success measure was landing the fish on the dock, and the evidence was the photograph. And I think you'll all agree that the goal was achieved. We managed to measure it and we got some evidence. Now, those of you that are quite smart in the room will also notice that I've become very good at photography, and holding the fish out quite away makes it look bigger. But trust me, this was a big fish. Okay, let's get to the serious part. So that's the analogy with the fishing. Now, when we move into standard setting, I think it's really valid to say that as a group, we acknowledged up front that coming up with measures of success and evidence for something like the goals that we've got is not an easy task. And I'd start off by saying that the measures of success that the board staff have already started to put down, we thought were a very good start for what is a very difficult subject. And also the evidence of those measures we thought was a very good start. So I want to lay that down, number one, to point out the difficulty, and number two, to highlight the fact in some of the comments that we've put here, what we tried to do as a group was take the lead that we were given at the beginning of the session, think outside the box in some areas, come up with some items that we thought were measurable, come up with some that were based on trends, and come up with others that may actually not be practical to implement, but in an ideal world may help achieve measuring the goals and evidence in them. So we also mapped them as well, because we're very good at listening to instructions in terms of in the secondary goals and where they might fit. And then the final slide I have on these is some other ideas that just came up and didn't really necessarily fit in one or the other, but probably in the overall goal. So the first one, maintaining and further enhancing and develop IFRS. Work plan delivered was one of the success metrics in the original material. The only thing we've added in there, we had some discussion as whether there should be some reference to time, and I've added in cost there. And please don't be afraid if you're at the ISB. We're not suggesting you have to fill timesheets in every day. But the concept was, and albeit it leads into efficiency somewhat, is that there probably should be some reference to a goal and a measurement against the length of time or, for example, the number of hours that goes in. Somebody came up with a survey of consultation effectiveness. The board puts an awful lot of effort into doing surveys before developing the standard, and we thought a good measure, not necessarily suggesting how you put it together, would be to get some feedback from those that were consulted as to how effective the standard was in addressing the points on the consultation, acknowledging you're not going to please everybody all of the time and there's different views in the consultation process, but we thought that would be a good one. A KPI on how consistently standards are applied. Again, in maintaining and IFRS and developing the global quality standard, one indicator we thought was the level of inconsistency around the world. Now, in order to do this, you'd need to have a starting point of almost an inventory of where those inconsistencies are today. And then over time, having targets and measuring reductions in those inconsistencies. Somebody mentioned simple and understandable on the issuance of a standard might help in terms of quality and implementation. And then the IFRIC question, which I think Soraya raised in the kickoff to the session, we thought that one good indicator or measure might be the number of or lack of interpretation requests in a certain period after the standard, whether it was released, whether it's 2 years or 3 years, which would give an indicator of whether the board had got the standard right. What we were very much against was getting rid of the IFRIC altogether, because as you go further away from the issuance of the standard, businesses change, the economies change, and there might be need for more interpretations for new and evolving businesses, for example. And that could actually be a leading indicator of where change is needed as interpretations are coming up down the line. Serving the public interest, one of the things we struggled with was a definition of public interest, and is it consistent around the world? Is public interest in Europe the same as public interest in North America? But I think the overriding view was some kind of survey, and you'll see the word survey coming up quite a bit here, of capital markets participants and others to actually address is public interest being served, as opposed to anecdotal evidence, for example. Embed best professional practice. A comment came up that it might be an idea for a periodic, we don't know what the period is, whether it's 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, review by a third party at the look at different processes, whether it's due process, oversight committee, etc., who's knowledgeable in whether it's standard setters, other similar organisations. Ensuring relevance, user involvement and trending of use of GAP versus non-GAP. This is a trending one. We've had a lot of talk in this meeting already that there's a prevalence of non-GAP. If you could measure that trend either away from non-GAP more to the GAP, that might be an indicator, for example. And then somebody raised the fact if you could collect the information and measure the use of the true and fair override as an indicator as to whether the standard was meeting its objectives. So on to the next slide. So these are some other ideas that came up in terms of items that could impact the KPIs. So KPIs around the process versus the outputs. Specifically looking at what goes into setting a standard, it shouldn't necessarily just be on the output. And linked in with that, we had a discussion on whether more could be done to actually look at the causal effects and learnings from where, for example, exposure drafts have failed. If you take my fishing example, I've shown you a good picture where I caught that big fish. If you go back 5 years, I would probably expect to catch one of those once a season. Now I expect to catch one once a week because I've learned from my mistakes early on. and now I know where to fish for the things, etc. So a bit of a feedback model into what the causal effects, and not to be afraid of learning from where there's been failures, where something's not gone to a full standard, for example. An existing suite of standards review on a periodic basis. And this is really linked in a little bit what I was saying on the IFRICs, in that when a standard first comes out, it may well be relevant, but as you go down the years, and I'll exemplify this in my last slide, there may be a need for change because of changes in business trends, etc. Regular monitoring of interaction and consistency between standards we thought was important, especially as new standards came out. And, you know, we were talking in the session this morning about fair value measurement and, you know, how there'd been a single fair value measurement standard because there might have been differences previously in different standards. This is one that was a sort of out-of-the-box thinking. Brand health index measurement. As we've gone through these meetings for the last couple of years, we've seen the evolution on the strategy in terms of branding IFRS, actually linked in with the licensing, the copywriting, etc. If truly IFRS is to become, you know, the leading brand, worldwide, standard setting, high quality, maybe there's some value in measuring and comparing year over year or period over period what that actual brand health index is. And we talked about, we all do this as firms and we compare against each other, etc. And there's firms that do that, but it's something to think about as to how you measure if you are actually being effective in building the brand and growing the brand. And one for the easily measurable, in terms of the global adoption, actually having a target of how many countries we're looking to convert and measuring those number of countries. So for example, if we're in 120 now, should we be aiming for 140 in the next 5 years? Should it be 130? But having some kind of measurement. Then the final point on the surveys and stakeholder feedback, I've just re-emphasised that because an awful lot of the things we came back to was putting in surveys and stakeholder feedback. And the key thing I would say there, the importantness is the robustness of that, as opposed to necessarily we're getting feedback on the grapevine to can we put some functionality. And the final slide, and you'll be happy for me to finish. This was really for Hans, but it's a shame he's not here at the moment. Oh, sorry, Hans, I didn't see you there. So we've obviously, there is a serious point to this slide as well, don't worry. We've obviously had a lot of talk yesterday and today about alternative performance measures and potentially some of the pressure on standard setting in addressing alternative performance measures being used in the marketplace, etc. So we came up with this. When I say we, this was the royal we. This came to me overnight as I was thinking of these slides, so I apologise to my colleagues if they don't agree with it. But we thought, well, maybe the IFRS should join in and have its own measure. Standards before interpretations, transition resource groups, disruption, that's in the form of business, and amendments as the alternative performance measure. And the serious point I would make is, and this is really as you move forward, is what's important is the standard high quality when it comes out? Because invariably, as you move down into the years, what was a high quality standard 5-10 years ago may cease to be as relevant as businesses have changed. A good example is the segment reporting. When segment reporting came out, it was all based on what reports paper-wise that a chief operating decision maker used. Nowadays, with systems, every piece of information is available at the touch of a button, and therefore some might argue, well, it's not as relevant as it was. So that's my final departing slide to hopefully get you all awake and set up my next three colleagues doing their presentations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul. Any further comments from his group? And do you all agree on standards before interpretations? What was the second? Transition. Support group, yeah. And amendments. Any comments from others in that group? One thing I will say, and I've said before, we'll leave comments to the end, but it helped me to think about these, because when you talk about some of these KPIs, you think about, well, how do you do it? And what is it telling you as an individual measure? But to me, it's the movement in those over time. A number of times you did talk about the trend or measure over time, and to me, an awful lot of these, and that is the value of, I think, an awful lot of measures, is how they move over time. So you set ongoing goals, and they, you know, the idea is that they're getting better. So you start with a base, and that they're getting better, and certainly surveys, and presumably that's what your group intended, Paul.
Absolutely, and I think the one point on the causal effects one that we were talking about is, in doing that, there would be an anticipation that that would help set measures in the future as you learn and get better, a bit like my fishing example. As you learn and get better and find the right lures to use, then your expectations should be higher.
Thank you. And the reason I said that was so that we could all sort of get that picture in our heads, because I think all of the groups will come up with that. Well, I'm feeling they will. I don't know. Okay, so group two, who also dealt with this one, Anne.
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry to the audience, but we don't have such nice pictures as group number one. But we discussed the same issue. So metrics, or developing metrics, or suggesting metrics for the first strategic goal of the IFRS Foundation. And this first strategic goal is developing high quality standards, understandable standards, and global adoption. However, we are we are aware that high quality standards are the product of a standard setting process, and that also you need metrics on measuring the efficiency and the effectiveness of the standard setting process. But we didn't look at those measures, but we are well aware that the two types of measures should be taken together because they might be correlated. So if you have a rather speedy standard setting process, your quality of accounting standards might be impaired. So we looked only at metrics to measure high quality accounting standards, but then the issue is, what is high quality? Sometimes we define high quality as those standards that drive preparers to report the underlying economic activity and don't leave a lot of discretion for smoothing earnings or hiding things off the balance sheet. Is quality standards standards that try to instigate true and fair reporting, substance over form? So if we develop metrics to measure high quality standards as an output of the process, we need to know very well, or we need at least to define, what is high quality standards. If we develop metrics or KPIs to measure if standards are high quality, we need, of course, data. And the metrics we see to measure if you have high quality standards developed will be based either on survey data that's collected or on data which is available in and outside the organization. And we will discuss metrics we see possible to build or develop based on these two types of data sources. With respect to surveys, we think it would be interesting to build a stratified sample of stakeholders so that you're sure that all different types of stakeholders are involved and that you can ask questions once a standard is issued to the different stakeholders. But their perspective on what is high quality for them might be different, because for preparers, you might ask, does the standard facilitate communication of a certain element in a more cost-beneficial way than before? With respect to users, you might ask the question, do these standards stimulate consistent information that allows you to evaluate firms across an industry? And if you do these types of surveys, if you have on both questions, for example, yes, then you know standard is high quality. If there are no's, then you have to dig deeper into the reasons why these standards don't live up to the expectations. So is it a question of that the standard is too costly, or maybe uncertainty of information? So things that evolve after a standard is issued, because we are aware that in the due process of standard setting, the EISB tries to capture also all these effects of standards. If you do this survey after the issuance of a standard and after a couple of years, it's similar to what the first group said, then you can see a trend. And normally, if stakeholders become more familiar with the standard, normally the appreciation of a standard of its high quality should increase. Indeed, after a while, when the economic situation changes, it might be different. If we measure these, or if we build up these KPIs, we always have to take into account the difference between more straightforward standards and more complex standards. The use of a stratified survey or a stratified population would allow you to present all the data in a matrix format, and you could see for which type of stakeholders some problems are more pertinent or more important than for other stakeholders. It's always important with these KPIs that they also catch how important is an issue for a stakeholder and if they feel that the EISB did a good job. So these were metrics built on a stratified survey population. Now we looked at metrics that might be available in the organization first. We think of the number of amendments that are applied after a standard are issued, after initial standard was issued. Maybe standards that are withdrawn after a while. The number of questions that are raised with respect to a standard after it is issued with staff members, board members, or questions submitted to IFRIC. And then we also have the post-implementation review evidence. I mean, with all these issues, we think it's important to single out comments that relate to the characteristics of the standard and determine its quality, and responses that are related to the fact that the stakeholder is just not happy with the solution taken by the EISB. For example, in the IFRS 3 discussion on goodwill, maybe someone is really in favor of amortization and is just not happy with impairment, despite the fact that impairment could also provide high quality information. Data available outside the organization, which the foundation could use, is, for example, the number of carve-outs that exist with respect to a certain standard in a number of countries. The number of countries that adopt IFRS versus adopt IFRS, the adoption or adoption of a standard. If you see that a lot of companies, although it's not really compliant with IFRS, say we adopt it. With respect to global adoption, the number of countries adopting, but also in countries where companies still have a voluntary or can decide voluntary to switch to IFRS, the number of companies, but also market capitalization. The number of errors that occur with a particular standard. So when companies make changes in accounting numbers because of an error, and worse, the number of restatements which maybe appear with respect to particular standards. Then again, data available outside the organization. So with respect to global adoption, the number of existing translations that might exist for standards. You could also look at academic studies that research the value relevance of information included in standards, whether there is a reduction of information asymmetry in capital markets, whether there is an increasing number of analyst coverage. This could be useful, but we have to be aware of limitations of academic studies. Then it was also suggested to maybe look at some case studies for those situations where companies fail and whether we notice that the failing situation was not translated in time into the accounting numbers. So there, the accounting numbers were not giving the information that the capital markets or investors would have expected, and then an investigation was this due to the accounting standards. So a last element which was raised, if the foundation develops metrics, a last element with developing the right metrics is that the foundation should care not only of the stakeholders in Western markets, but that they also should develop metrics to see whether emerging markets or non-Western countries also, whether IFRS there is also perceived as high quality, understandable, and so on. We also need metrics to measure the success of IFRS for SMEs, so besides the full IFRS. And in the group, there was suggested a metric, but it's probably not possible to get hold of the metric, is, for example, how much money Big Four and other auditors make on certain standards. So if they make a lot of money on a certain standard, maybe it is because there's a lot of confusion on the standards. Then you provided us with a slide where you had examples on, is it possible to develop the right metrics on these examples of evidence? And the first one you provided to us was feedback from the agenda consultation. And our group thought that feedback from the agenda consultation was in fact a too high level to build on critical performance indicators. You suggested reports from investors and other market participants. Yeah, we do agree that these are right examples of evidence. Conduct own surveys. So we suggest, we answered that a little bit in our prior slides, that we think a stratified survey is useful. Develop an IFRS research center. So to link to the academic world, we suggested, yes, some evidence can be found in academic studies. And then benchmarking with other organizations, and we will comment on that on the other slides. The third question was, should we focus on smart measure or qualitative measures? We think if an element is measurable and comparable, then you can focus on quantitative measures, because a quantitative measure, in fact, assumes that an element is measurable and comparable. If an element is not really measurable and comparable, then we think that qualitative measures are more in place, and qualitative measures in the sense of directional guidance, improvements, and trends. Important, if you set up critical performance indicators, is always keep an account of the interdependencies between these individual key performance indicators, because quite often what you measure is what you get, and if you focus too much on a number of indicators and forget about the others, you can have myopia in the decision making. So it's important to always keep track of a balanced set of critical performance indicators. Then the fourth question, should we have formal targets or measure trends? So we already, in fact, answered that. Targets imply figures, if you want to work with targets. And usually in companies, if they set targets, they have internal and external benchmarking partners that could provide information on the level of the target or the figure to include in the target. And then the question in our group was, who do we benchmark with? Because the International Accounting Standards Board and the Foundation, they are international organizations. With respect to high-quality accounting standards, the other bodies are national standard setters, and they have different kinds of problems and issues to deal with. So what's the best benchmarking partner? Other national standard setters or international organizations? And so we were a little bit in doubt. So measure trends is our preference, and we will suggest to look at improvements over time instead of setting hard targets. And then the last slide, what else should we consider? I think all the thoughts and ideas of our group were considered in the prior slides. There was also the suggestion that if you start with targets, even qualitative targets, you need an idea of a baseline from which you start and a baseline level you want to start from and then improve that baseline level. So I think that was my summary of the ideas presented in the group, but I would like to invite other members of the group to see if I haven't forgotten anything.
It appear not. Certainly from my perspective, that was a pretty comprehensive report back. And I think the combination of yours and Paul's in terms of the groups, they were very valuable. I think the groups went on slightly different directions in terms of the discussion, which I think is valuable in itself, in that there are slightly different ways of approaching this. But I certainly, and therefore for me to try to aggregate them, I think is a little difficult. However, I think that some of the key themes that did come out for me was surveys, I think, have come out of that. And I think Anne's very last comment, I think, is what I was talking about, and I think Paul alluded to, which is a baseline to start in terms of doing surveys and expectations for performance indicators, and therefore it's the over time and the trending around a lot of these things. And that, data, what data there is available is very useful, again, on a trending thing as a baseline, to say how are we doing on some of these things, and obviously the interpretations committee and the number of questions, and I think the bit is, in fact, although it was done as a brainwave joke thing to make us think, is actually very valid. So what are the standards before all those things, and what, all of those things, how do you measure those things in terms of, and they might be some of the indicators that's coming through. So that was what I got out of those, and I see Richard sort of vaguely nodding when I say things. So what I might do is just open it up to the floor. Obviously, groups 3 and 4 didn't consider this particular one. If there are any comments from anyone who didn't consider these and or the others, and then I might ask Richard perhaps to make some comments about the feedback that he's got on those before we get on to the other two groups. Is that because it's all too hard, or... Oh, Jake, go for it.
Something we were challenged to think about in our group, which I'm not sure whether it came through or not. That was clearly very, very detailed feedback and very good feedback. But it seemed to focus very much on the quality of what the output was, rather than asking the question, did we do the right stuff? And one of the questions I think we need to find some way to measure is, did we do the right projects in the first place? And whether that's, again, surveys of constituents to say, what would you have addressed as the board? And I know that's part of the consultation, but that's certainly a forward-looking thing. Is there a backward-looking measure around, actually, are we addressing the real problems that people perceive?
Any other comments from the group? Okay. Richard, would you like to make some comments as a result of those?
Yeah, thank you. That was terrific. First, thank you very much. There's an enormous amount there, more than I expected, actually. It's very interesting that the two groups went at this from different angles, from the standards and the output. And my initial thought on that is, and this is just the first thought, what if we have a year when we don't produce any standards? That could well happen with a reduced workload and more focus on implementation. That would make life a little difficult. I do like SPITDAR. I'm sure that we will be using that phrase a lot more internally. It really trips off the tongue, doesn't it, SPITDAR? So that was great. When I was working on the Basel Committee work on redefining capital, my instruction was to come up with a standard that nobody liked. Because if nobody liked it, it was providing sufficient misery for everyone. It had to be just that. Nobody liked it, but nobody really disliked it. And there is something in that, actually. That's a huge oversimplification, but sometimes we're looking to get a standard which delivers something for everyone, within a reasonable time span, and I think that's something we may come back to a bit as well. But thank you, that was really, really helpful.
Okay, Michelle and Yael, I'm going to ask you to comment perhaps at the end of the total session rather than between these, so be prepared. But let's go to groups 3 and 4, so effectively your consideration of strategy 3, which has immediately escaped me, but I'm sure your slides will show what it is. So the first person, group 3, was Gavin, wasn't it?
So,
you look surprised.
So, well, I thought we were going for group 4 then for a moment to mix it up. But anyway, we'll carry on. let's move through the pictures quickly, which you've done. So that's excellent. So what we're talking about, if we can go on to the next slide, is basically, a consistent application of IFRS. I'd echo a couple of the comments that have already been made. One, this is very difficult, setting smart objectives. It's always very difficult. It's even more difficult in this context. Two, I think to echo, I guess, something Jake said, but we tried to focus on effectiveness rather than efficiency of process. However, I think we rapidly discovered the two overlap each other quite a lot, and it's quite difficult sometimes to disentangle the two, and you'll see that in some of the points I made. But I guess fundamentally what we were trying to ask ourselves is, how does the foundation know it's getting bang for its buck, i.e. return on the investment is appropriate and it's putting the investment in the right place? And that's really quite difficult to do. So basically, the first one was that we're going to talk to is an effective interpretation process. I've got the wrong slide here. Okay. So what do we think an effective interpretation process looks like? Well, let me go right to the bottom. So actually, we think a tangible goal is to set an objective of reducing number of interpretations each year. Why? Because essentially what that means is everything else that is happening before that, including setting the standard in the first place, the educational activity, the implementation support activity, is being effective, and therefore, theoretically, as we sort of briefly touched on yesterday, you shouldn't really need an interpretations process. That's, of course, not realistic. You always will need an interpretations process, but a good KPI from an effectiveness of everything else that's happening before is actually that year on year you're seeing a decline, or at least not a tick up, in the number of interpretations that are being delivered.
Putting IFRIC out of business in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As an objective, you'll never get there.
When I first went on to the interpretations committee, whatever it was, 8 years ago, I said my goal is to get rid of us.
Right.
I failed dismally.
But at least now you'd be able to measure that goal. So that's, if you like, an overall goal and maybe a way to measure it. Then we looked at various components that you might think about the effectiveness of the interpretation process. So one is timeliness, and actually what we think there should be is some clear time objectives for the different outputs that the interpretations process can deliver. And we, for example, thought that should be bounded at 12 months for issuance of an interpretation. And depending the other, you know, tools that the interpretations process has in its toolbox, basically to set discrete time limits for all the other activities, and then to measure yourself against those and call them out and ask yourselves why that wasn't delivered against. So timeliness, number one. Scoping. I think a recurring issue is understanding really what the question is that's being asked or what the problem is you're trying to solve. So as an objective, actually, any time an issue is put into the formal, to the committee, actually, there should not be any further requests from the committee for more information. So the pack of information, the problem statement, the question that's delivered is complete, accurate, sufficient for the interpretations process to start delivering against the timelines set out in the previous bullet. The right issues, so to Jake's comment, I guess, the right issues are being addressed through the interpretations process. That is effective prioritisation. We didn't really come up with a suggestion about what the right metric might be or what the right KPI might be, but clearly that's a pretty key component of asking, am I spending my time, effort, resource in the right place? Efficiency. Number of times the committee discusses issues. And that, you could look at that as efficiency as process, but that's also efficiency in terms of use of other people's time and resources as well. Because every time the interpretations committee discusses something, there's a whole collection of other people in interested parties that spend time, effort, etc., following that discussion. So we thought setting a discrete KPI in terms of the number of times that the committee should discuss a particular issue, and indeed dependent upon whatever the tool was or the outcome was that the interpretations process was going to use to deliver against that issue. Quality of interpretations. So I guess how good was the interpretation that's being delivered? So I guess what doesn't happen today is necessarily any sort of follow-up, any sort of almost mini, I guess, post-implementation review of an interpretation to basically say the interpretation that was delivered, actually, how effective was that at addressing the problem that the committee was asked to address in the first place? So I think some formalisation, some KPI or whatever around that to talk to quality of the interpretation and completeness. So I think one thing that frustrates many of us is when issues are raised through the interpretations process, and then in my words, they ping pong between various parts of the ISB. And indeed, sometimes they are left out there hanging for quite a while with no necessary closure of an item. So from a preparer's perspective, that clearly puts me in a very awkward position because there's still an issue out there. So I think having the time limits around the different outputs is one thing, but a clear objective should also be that all issues that are put through the interpretations process are closed, and they're closed only using the tools that the interpretations process has at its disposal. I.e., people don't start to get creative or come up with excuses or other mechanisms to essentially, I guess, delay and or not necessarily close an issue that's been raised through the interpretations process. And finally, none of this would be complete without a survey, so we thought some sort of shareholder satisfaction index survey. I'm not a great believer in surveys, or at least the quality of them, but I think to Joanna's point, what they do give is a sense of direction of travel. And clearly, you know, there would be room for something like that around here. So that's effective interpretation process. We can flick on to the next slide. So the next one was implementation support. So we thought there should be various, KPIs here again. One, clear objective to have an explicit plan up front when a new standard is issued to set out target milestones and measures against which that plan or the execution of that plan will be measured. For example, for a major new standard, any implementation support, formal implementation support, as we talked about yesterday, should arguably stop 12 to 24 months before it becomes effective. So actually, by requiring to have that up front and set it out up front, what you then set is a set of KPIs around a discrete implementation effort against which that can be measured and managed.
And to the extent it's not delivering or is going out of off track, it's very clear to be seen and actions can be taken. Reach, in terms of implementation support, once again as part of that plan to set out clear geographic, market and stakeholder targets. Who is it as part of that plan we want to target, and indeed when as part of that plan do we want to target them? So for example, investors, typically most of them are not going to be particularly interested, you know, more than, I don't know, 12 to 24 months ahead of a standard becoming effective. So you wouldn't necessarily put a lot of, I guess, you know, education and other support into that. You would try and focus that towards the back end of, I guess, implementation support and indeed education, which is the next one. But I think setting some targets as part of that plan and then measuring against them. Next thing is upfront identification of key issues and then measuring against those key issues. Did I get those right? Were there other key issues I hadn't discovered as part of my initial scoping or discovery exercise? And why was that the case? So a lot of this is trying to set metrics or put metrics in place that, one, let you sort of assess your progress, but two, actually are also part of a learning and self-improvement process next time I come to put some implementation support in place. I guess techniques being used. So one KPI you could have, for example, is that, you know, if I do WebExes, I have an objective for each WebEx during a particular implementation support plan to increase the penetration of those or the number of people that listen to them. So clearly, if you're being effective and word gets out, you'd hope that you'd have more people listen. If you're not, then possibly you should try and think about changing the way you're doing them. And indeed, the target mix of stakeholders. So who do I think the right target mix is at different points in that implementation plan? Am I hitting that? If I'm not hitting that, what do I need to do to the delivery of the product and the shape of the product as I move through that implementation support delivery plan? Next one, this was my bright idea, which Sue Lloyd particularly liked and endorsed. But regulators, as some of you will know, particularly if in the financial services sector, love doing quizzes, quantitative impact surveys. They put us preparers through a whole bunch of misery and pain in basically as part of the development of new regulatory requirements. IS8 clearly sets out that preparers should talk about new standards before they come effective, you know, the materiality or the possible impact of them. I think many investors would point to some of those disclosures today and say they're not great. So totally off the bat idea, but why doesn't the ISB think about actually as part of its implementation support doing some sort of qualitative or quantitative quiz exercise? But then actually the only way that would be taken up by preparers is to also build it into the IS8 framework that requires you to talk about the progress you've made around implementation and preparation for new standards. So pretty off the wall suggestion, but there you go, you wanted some different things. What that would also talk to, or could also talk to, is how effective that implementation support that the IFRS Foundation is delivering is actually being, depending on the output of those quizzes. Another survey, always last, but stakeholder satisfaction index, regular surveys, once again. I guess the overall goal at the bottom is to try and measure awareness and understanding at key points during any implementation support program to ensure effectiveness of that implementation support. Next one is educational activities. To some extent overlaps a bit with the previous one. But once again, if you go to the bottom, goal, measure timely and effective educational delivery. Are we educating on the right topics, and is the delivery mechanism and the content and the product being effective in delivering that education? So some ideas, I guess, we came up with. Are we focusing on the right areas? you could use surveys pre and post delivery to ask that question. But I think to be much more explicit up front about what the areas, focus areas are. Measure questions received versus the areas that actually the education effort is focusing on. I think some other people have already mentioned that. What is the awareness of the different educational products that the IFRS uses? Set targets for different types of stakeholder groups for different types of products, and then measure on a trend basis against those about awareness. Investors are an important target for educational support, so put some metrics around investor engagement. For example, you know, how many questions are we getting from investors, on what topics, when are we getting them, you know, how many analyst reports are we being seen issued, for example, on IFRS 9, and how many would I expect to be, you know, issued, for example, on a new standard. Set an objective that you want to increase the trend of those analyst reports, and formalise feedback mechanisms to measure engagement with investors from an educational perspective. And there again, last bullet again, stakeholder satisfaction index. Let's do a survey. Next slide. So basically, the overall goal is consistent application of IFRS. So question mark, what is the best measure overall of that objective? How do we actually measure consistent application? Is it, for example, around regulator reports about inconsistent practice? Should we use surveys, for example, on initial application of new standards to try and gauge whether or not application, when preparers first apply standards, the extent of consistency of application or not? Role of post-implementation reviews and anything else. So I don't think I necessarily have any answers for, if you like, that overall goal, because it sort of depends, I guess, in the first place, about how you think consistent application should really be measured or judged. I think I've finished, haven't I? Is there anything else?
Yes,
good.
Great summary, Gavin. Anyone else from Gavin's group or anybody from Gavin's group got any further comment? Okay, last but not least, I'm absolutely sure, Surya.
Thank you, Joanna. It's always tough to be the last team, and most of the groups before have covered some of the themes that came up. And there was commonality, but even though we had two different sets of questions, we have the same commonality in thinking. Our room was quite mixed in terms of we had preparers, we had regulators, we had auditors, and we also had a good mix of emerging markets and developed markets. So as you can see from the photograph, there were quite a number of good animated conversations. Just to take you through, we looked at the effective interpretation process, implementation support, and education activities. And somewhat similar to what Gavin mentioned, our group felt that you couldn't really answer question two on implementation support without getting on to the education activities. The other area we talked about broadly before we got into the specifics is we've been given a straw man and we are trying to measure that, but are there other things the foundation and the board should be doing which we are not yet measuring? And initially we did get drawn into an argument of what more needs to be done, but we felt we could trap that again through some of the responses we have to the KPIs. So if I take you to the first question that was there, do we have the right success metrics for assessing effectiveness of the strategic goals? Broadly, the answer was yes, but we felt we could ask regulators for specific data on implementation issues. And when I say specific data, I don't mean which organization made what mistake, but it's more the types of interpretation issues that come. So you could go to ESMA, you could go to other regulators across the world. And to that extent, we also suggested, do you actually have an annual workshop with the regulators all over the world to say, let's hear them out? Specifically focusing on the interpretation committee, we thought beyond what was already given in the initial discussion paper, we thought we could look at the number of requests, but not just numbers per se, but also look at the root cause analysis. Why did that query come up in the first instance? Similar to the regulators, we could seek anonymized data from auditors in terms of what are some of the interpretation challenges they face. And third point was we could scan the research that is out there in the world to see what are those research papers talking about. And that goes beyond the ISB's research agenda as well. In terms of educational activity, we felt, and I don't think anybody has mentioned this before, website tracking. What kind of people query the ISB website, and I'm not an expert in this, but I'm sure the teams that are in the know on this can be able to pull some insightful data. We talked about train the trainer, and here we focused not just on how many train the trainer courses we conduct, but also what's the efficacy at the second level. What did the trainer do after that? Who did they reach out to? Do we have some statistics out there? And the third was really number of education workshops, conferences, and not just the number. And then what was the feedback that we got out of those workshops and conferences? Or is it just one way? So it's important to close the communication loop on these. Moving on to another question, do we have the right examples of evidence? And we thought mostly yes, but the post-implementation review we felt was too much of a lagging indicator because there's a gap between when the standards come out and when we do the PIR, and there's a need to monitor and measure in between. We're not suggesting to drop that, but we're just saying there has to be a more immediate focus. I talked about the train the trainer. There was a specific example from the emerging markets world around all the challenges we've had around agriculture. And the question asked was, and this could link into the new website design as well, that if somebody says, where do I find the resources for agriculture, can they just zoom in into the ISB websites and get down there? And if they cannot, then that's a negative measure. We'd also want to focus on the geographic diversity of both the implementation outreach and queries, as the IFRS needs to be more global. Need to track the website downloads to see what is it that people are downloading. Are they just downloading things that point to issues or that point to implementation challenges? There was a question on should we focus on quantitative or qualitative measures, and the team was kind of evenly divided and felt that both are needed on a case-by-case basis, depending on what you're measuring. So Sue's going to laugh. We have survey techniques again for implementation support for adopters. But we also talked about a CRM capability within the foundation. I think as I talk to the staff, I do know that they keep track of some of these things, but I don't think the foundation has a CRM capability like many organizations do to be able to analyze that big data. And this will probably go back to a budget issue sooner or later. But these are... Sorry, sir.
What is a CRM?
It's a customer relationship management. So when you call your airline call center, they know who you are, how many flights you've had before, what kind of meals you have. So if we had the same kind of insight on the people who call us or check on us, we'd be able to build some history over time. And we also said the website should be capable of receiving questions. You do not obviously want to provide answers in a website that's a bit too open-ended and wouldn't follow the due process, but you could keep track of what comes in through the website and analyze that as well. There was a question on formal targets or measure trends. Our group did not specifically discuss this. I note most of the other teams that went before us felt that trends were meaningful. That was also my personal opinion, and as I end the presentation, I'd welcome the rest of the team to chip in on that point. And then we said, what else should we consider? So we did feel that the education efforts should not upstage the due process, so there's a balance to be maintained there. I talked about the ISB, can they coordinate a global regulators conference to discuss interpretation issues? And finally, we talked about an IFRS textbook. I don't think the ISB or the foundation encourages people to write textbooks, and there could be the royalty issue there. But in the US and in a few other countries, people do go through the textbook route. And there's probably some mileage there that we are missing. So those were broadly the thoughts that came from the group. I'd request anybody to chip in on the trend or any other comments.
No other comments. Again, I find it fascinating that the two groups, and I think really great, again, in terms of feedback, took different approaches to dealing with this, in that group four, Surya's group, tended to have more specific KPIs, whereas the approach that Gavin's group took was around trying to identify effectively what being effective meant for each of those things. And I think that, you know, what's come out of, I certainly see what's come out of all four groups, because they had different, I think, are really useful for Richard in terms of thinking of an approach to how to deal with these, because I certainly think that Gavin's team's approach of saying what does it mean to be effective, that automatically is your step to then how do you measure that. So I certainly thought that that was a very, with the logical mind that I've got, a very logical approach to it. And certainly, I think, Surya, what came out of your group that hadn't come out of any of the others was making sure that we, although Anne's group emphasised the data aspect, was making sure that we use the website and the data that is embedded in the website or people using the website as assistance in terms of measuring some of the aspects. That seemed to be a theme coming through from your group around that. So those were, yeah, without me specifically saying what the KPIs were out of those two, those are the sort of what I got out of those two. But overall, in terms of all four, I thought, you know, different approaches, different thoughts, and some really valuable insights. So perhaps just focusing on the last two for a moment, is there any further comment on Gavin and Surya's feedback? Stephen?
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of focus back on the website issue, because with so many hundreds of thousands possibly of people who are going to be logging in and you'll have information on them, and we've talked in virtually every one of those about surveys, you've got a natural ability to do that in real time very, very quickly. And I think we should be focused a little bit on ensuring the quality of our, we know our user base, so that we can use that to do more, you know, I suppose, pointed questions to the audience we do have.
Very valid point, and they can be, you know, in time, effectively. Just ask the question, one, you know, quick question to get a survey response. Garth.
To comment on all four presentations, I think the one thing I'm just a bit concerned is we've got a whole list of KPIs that have been suggested, but what are they actually measuring? Should there be a link back to what specific goal they are aiming to achieve? And just by way of example, if you look at the secondary goals for goal number three, I would classify them as prevent issues? What about detect? How do we detect inconsistencies? And so that's why I'm just saying, to me, I think there's some, we might not have necessarily covered everything in what we have done. For example, inconsistency, the extent to which there might be bodies in different countries that issue interpretations. Or do we even know about them? And so that was what was perhaps missing as far as I was concerned.
Garth, I certainly take on board what you've said. I think we answered a specific or considered specific questions around those three secondary goals. And I think, as we said at the beginning of the session, are we allowed to address what the secondary goals were? And I mean, it would have been a much, much wider, and Yale and Richard are looking at that for effectively the strategic plan for work plan for next year. And I think the comments that you've made are very, very valid about making sure those are right. And yes, we've come up with a whole swathe of KPIs. There is no way in the wide world that I expect Richard and Yale to use all of those, but it's the essence of what we've come up with and the thought processes and some ideas around those that then would link, I absolutely agree, to, and I'm presuming that that's what they would do, to specific goals and making sure we've got those secondary goals as the right things. Perhaps just to wrap up, Richard, do you want to just make any comments?
Yeah, thank you. Again, thank you on those last two. That was an enormous amount of thinking there that we can use. One thing that struck me listening to those two debates is that there is the prospect of a feedback loop here. So as we're looking at the effectiveness of the standards and the KPIs on that, that will in turn affect the agenda. And should we be going back to some of the older standards? And that was one of the things that came out. So that may help to answer Garth's point that it becomes part of our business, both to look at effectiveness and then over time to go back and see whether the standard is still valid. And that was a point that was made. A question which I might take up with Gavin offline is whether those criteria that you set for the success of IFRIC could be applied also to the success of actually setting the standards in the first place. Should we have time limits on those discussions? I suspect that's not one for an open meeting, but I'd be very interested in any views any of you have on that. Should we have some normative time spans for standards depending on how challenging they are? And should we be expected to explain why we haven't met those normative time spans? But interesting stuff. Thank you.
Yale, Michelle, comments from you?
Just to say that to me, the huge diversity of suggestions here, very broadly, I distinguish between measuring our impact in terms of measuring activity, which were some of the suggestions, and with all the limitations on that, because sometimes, you get confusing messages from measuring your activity. And measuring your impact based on perceptions and subjective perceptions, so the objective versus the subjective and the limitations of each, and probably we should think about a creative combination of the two, and also we have to be simple. So I would try to get some of the, if we manage to get some 2-3 simple ideas that we can do in the next year, that would be, I think, a great achievement, a great move forward.
Well, just a brief word to thank you all. I think that was a very valuable exercise, and it was excellent cooking that delivered a lot of food for thought. So we have to look into this and see what is achievable and what we can do. There is one point I wanted to react to, because it's an old idea I have, and successfully, I have to say, until now. When Surya mentioned the role that the big firms, the network firms, could play on this, I mean, one paradox of the situation is that these big networks are supposed to have a an immense knowledge of what is going on in the field. And because of competition, because of issues of secrecy or anonymity or the difficulty to exchange views, in a way, we have not found the relevant solution to exploit this mine of information. And I guess when they have lunch or dinner together, they talk about life and they exchange views and they probably identify difficulties ahead of the time when the difficulties blow up. And it's a bit odd that we have not been able to organize, and they have not been able to organize between themselves a dialogue such that they could bring to us issues ahead. And by the way, this goes beyond accounting standards and financial reporting. This is something I thought when I was a securities regulator. Regulators by nature are not ahead of the events. They try, but they are not by nature able to identify what's happening in the market, and they are informed usually a bit too late. Whereas I guess auditors, possibly others, but probably could identify issues quite ahead of the standard setters and the regulators, generally speaking. So I think this is something we should work on, possibly beyond the IFRS Foundation, by the way. Anyway, thank you very much. It was quite interesting to collect all those proposals.
And the last word on this, Hans.
Yeah, I also want to thank you for your very creative and voluminous input. A lot of ideas, and I was just looking at my. I just asked him, "Did you do all that when you worked for us?" But there's a lot for us to chew on. The only thing I want to say now is we will have to keep these things simple.
Yes.
Not everything is easy to measure. By the way, if we are doing a very bad job in things, we will usually hear from bodies like yours and from others. But so we have to keep a bit simple. We are a small organization. It would take a lot of time if we would try to measure just about everything. Also, you know, whoever uses the internet and buys services or goods through the internet, you will get about 3 requests per day to how do you value our services? Could you fill out this this little form for us? I only do it when I'm unhappy, because then it is worth the effort. But otherwise, I don't do it anymore. It's just you cannot do it. So we have to also be careful in how often we are going to ask you again and again to provide us with information. So we have to do it in a smart way.